Blog Talk
Let's
Radio.
Do it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, oh yeah. African American Empowerment Saturday. It is, brothers and sisters, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your name, Marvin Rose, and the crew. Coming to you live to African American Empowerment Sunday. Saturday. Sorry about that. Hey. Anyway, we got it, bro. Much more. It is empowering. And it is happening. Oh yeah. And as always, there is no better or no greater love than for self and no greater love. Welcome again, brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, to African American Empowerment Saturday. It is 365 days. You probably wonder why it's 365 days, because it's every day of empowerment at some level for our people. And the work here is to think about how we can continue to do this work at level, right? And there's so many levels that this work needs to be done at because of the situations that we find ourselves in. Mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally, societally. You just name it, right? And those are the areas in which we face issues, right? As a community, as a family, as individuals, and those things like really matter when you think about it, right? Because until, Brother Booker says it, until we unify and we come together, because we have so many differences, right? And when you think about a group of people, a hodgepodge or a potluck of people, and that will be our discussion today, it's going to be a potluck. Potluck of people coming from different cultures, different societies within the diaspora, if you will, right? And those Africans who were brought over here, which were merged with the indigenous Africans who were already here, right? Or the indigenous Americans of color, if you will, right? We have so many differences. And then when you marry that with a culture and a system of oppression, man, you got a mixed bag of some issues, right? Some stuff that needs to be worked out. And so when you look at the condition of many of our families based on how we see ourselves, how we relate to each other, how we communicate, there is issues that we're going to have to overcome, right? In having of perspective and opinion. And you know, as the host of this show and thinking about African-American empowerment, there are going to be some obstacles and challenges that not only myself and the team who work with us, but just in general that we're going to have to face as a community as we continue to evolve, right, and work through. As Brother Booker says, I'm referencing you today, brother. We can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable, right? And as we continue to plow ahead, right, into this future that we can see, how do we do that together? We have a five-point platform here for African-American empowerment, which is the peace concept, right? And we need peace. We desperately need peace. I'm telling you, we do. In so many realms and in so many areas in our lives. So I'll just get to the peace concept. Politics, right? And politicking is just not like systems, but it's also how you can be political in your strategy, right? So you can have a political strategy, but understanding the systems of politics and how they work, how policy works, how the legal system works for African Americans, people of color in this country. How do we understand how to navigate these systems is what I'm speaking to directly. How do we begin to structure ourselves to understand the legal system and how it works, for example, right? That, how do you politic your way around that? How do you use politics to better your community and better yourself and better equip, create knowledge base for you to understand how this system works and how to navigate it successfully? Let's move on to the ease. Economics, an economic platform and economic agenda that really focuses on how to use the resources to best build, right, and navigate, again, this system. How do we define and build institutions that are our children need or our communities needs is going to be the best interest for us as we move forward, right? And economics is talking about how we can utilize money, right? Money management and what those systems do and how we can use money, right, to benefit us, right? We just came through a large, I'm going to say billion-dollar industry that the holiday season is, right? And when you think about that, how many of us are really plugged in economically to benefit off of the holiday season, right, where money is going out? Oh, yes, 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 it is. But how much is coming back into our families and our communities where we can use those resources to build and invest? Next is the A, it's the individual piece. Do you have your A together? That's athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, mental health, physical health, and emotional health. What are you taking care of those parts of your life? And it's important to do that, right? It's important to really take care of yourself from a holistic perspective, right? Getting your A together, right? Getting up, pushing away from the table, getting a routine that works for you, clearing your mind, meditation, relaxation, stress reduction, on and on and on. And so I'm imploring you and I'm asking that we get these things together because of the health disparities and the situations that we face mentally, physically, environmentally, and genetically, right? Those things are factors in our lives that we have to face. Next is to see relevant cultural programs like this one really help us understand how important culture is, right, and the importance of it and how we must utilize culture to educate ourselves, which then brings us to the last E, and that is education, right? A comprehensive education that really looks at how all of these facets of our reality work together to benefit us. And that is what the NAAEA is really all about. That's what it stands on, right? That's our ethos, and that's what we're all about. info.com. So that's it for today on that. And now to Stand Back in a moment, we'll be right back with Brother George and the Winning Lich Quantum segment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
That's right. Brother Stan is right. And that's what we're doing. We're working on developing institutions that define our own reality, right, of how we think and how we feel and how we experience this reality. And it's so important that we think about how to do that and then create plans and strategies to go and execute those things, right? Really look at how we can get good at that, because when we stop trying to get in and fit in, we create stuff that work for things or endeavors that work for us, then we're doing the right thing the right way. And that is how we have to do things. So Brother Stan is right. He continues to be the beacon of light as he continues to share with us how important these tenets are. Again, www.naaea.info. Yeah. Is that right? I don't know. I'll tell y'all again later. All right, now we'll go to a Willie Lynch Quantum segment with Brother George. Be right back. Oh, yeah. Bring it.
Bring it.
Right here, Brother George, you right here. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, brother. I really appreciate the opportunity to do what I do with the show each week. You know, I appreciate it. You know. So, today is Umoja, unity. To strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, race, and nation. Umoja, which means unity. According to the traditional African perspectives, every living thing comes from the same spiritual source, and therefore, everyone and everything is equally deserving of respect. When we have a realization that all life is one, we begin to open our hearts to others and we receive blessings in return. We can see that it is in our best interest to hold the best interest of all at heart. We understand that what we do to another, we do to ourselves. And so we are always careful in our relation to respect all life. Unity through motion. Now, that's interesting, you know, because the topic that we're going to talk on today is going to be related to that. Now, today's Willie Lynch segment is going to be on a very interesting book, and I've taken, it's more of a workbook than it is an actual book for the purpose of reading. And it's called, it's by Kaba Hiawatha Khomeini. And some may know him as Booker T. Coleman, Professor Booker T. Coleman at some point, but he changed his name, and he's known now as Kaba Hiawatha Khomeini. And it's called Multiple Intelligence. And I thought that this topic was very interesting. I thought it was very interesting when he did a DVD on this years ago, like back in the 80s. And I thought that it was very interesting then. And I don't think I really took the time to learn as much about it as maybe I should have, seeing that I'm around young people a lot. I have been around young people a lot in my endeavor. So I'm going to read what he says about multiple intelligence. The theory of multiple intelligence. Multiple intelligence theory suggests that intelligence is not just singular, fixed. It's not just a singular, fixed entity, but rather a collection of different abilities that individuals possess to varying degrees. Gardner posed that there are several distinct types of intelligences, including linguistic, logical, and mathematics, spatial, which is like visual, body kinesthetic, which is, you know, your physical activity, music, which is between people, intrapersonal, which is yourself, and naturalistic intelligence. Each intelligence represents a unique way of understanding and interacting with the world. This theory has significant implications for education as it highlights the importance of recognizing and nurturing diverse forms of intelligence in students. The concept of multiple intelligence challenges the traditional notion of intelligence being solely measured through academic performance and standardized tests. It acknowledges that students have different strengths and learning styles, and that these differences should be taken into account in educational settings. By recognizing and valuing these various intelligences, educators can create a more inclusive and effective learning environment. For example, a student with high bodily kinesthetic intelligence may excel in activities that involve movement and hands-on experiences, with a student with strong musical intelligence may learn best through rhythm, melody, and song. By incorporating a variety of instructional melodies, methods, and assignment techniques that cater to different intelligences, teachers can engage and foster their individual talents. I think that that's one of the biggest problems that the school system has, is that the school system has not figured out that young people have multiple intelligences, and that you may have an excellent football player, and they say that he's struggling with his classwork, you might be able to reach him through his knowledge of football and strengthen his other areas, because he got another area that's there that could be used to learn through. But you might start with the football field and then work your way from there back into the classroom to help them achieve more through their ability, their kinesthetic abilities or their bodily abilities. And they may also be good at interpersonal, which is what's going on with inside of them. They may not be a vocal person away from the football field. They might be intrapersonal away from the football field. And so you have to learn those different things. But I think the school system doesn't take the time to really engage to figure out that students are learning from more than one traditional way. And they need to take that into consideration if they expect to be successful with stopping the killing, with stopping a lot of these different things and opening up people's minds to move into areas, more diverse areas, and to use their full potential. If they plan on being successful with that, then they're going to have to go in line with this multiple intelligence concept. And so, Brother Marvin, you know, I know I went a little long, you know, but I'm really into multiple intelligence at this time, and I'm just tossing around a lot of thoughts inside my mind how I can effectively use this, you know, as a teaching method when I get involved with young people. So I'm done for today, you know, as far as that goes. And if you have the question of the week, then, you know, we can move into that, brother.
Well, I appreciate that. But first of all, I just would like to say thank you for the segment. Great job again. And we have to, again, right, use this information, right? And again, with the pillars of the NAEA, this is by education, right? So the book is trying to tell us, to teach us, to show us, for example, about the purpose and the usefulness of multiple intelligence, right? So how do we use this as a tool, right? How do we then take this information and then begin to, one, filter it, evaluate it, and then use it, right? Because that's what we're here for, to educate and elevate our people. Brother George, here's the empowerment question of the week. You said in your opening statement, we do to others what we do to ourselves. Can you expand upon that, the empowerment question of the week? We're doing to ourselves.
That was in the,
to ourselves.
In the Kwanzaa. That was,
yes,
in
sir.
The Kwanzaa section. That's exactly right. You know, like in the nation, we have a lot of words that are broken down. And so you have your brother, you have your mother, you know, you have different words that have like a prefix in the beginning that tells you the rest of that word. And so a brother is like another self. Your other self. And so for some people, you know, they don't get that. You know, they really are connected because we're a group of people. And so without one, without two, the rest of us wouldn't be here. And we don't understand that. We've become individualistic in mindset, because that was a huge part of European culture because of the way that nature raised them as a group in an environment of scarcity. And so being in that environment of scarcity, it tended to put them on full alert. Got stock up, and you got to get as much as you can, even if you take it from someone else. And I need to be straight as an individual. And so now that we've been in America for so long, the concept of the people, the dominant group of people, is going to filter into your thinking. And so many of us, that's what we do. We think about what we want as an individual, what we need to make things right. And so we have to get away from that. Because what you do to your brother, you're doing to yourself. The reason why we can't unify is because what we do to our brother, we're doing to ourselves. We're fighting against unity by unifying, by thinking in terms of what I need to do as an individual, then I'm not including my brother. And so when I was active in the nation and soldiering, you wanted for your brother what you wanted for yourself. And I still do. And I still have very close relationships with the brothers that I soldiered with. And they will give me anything that they got. Because we want for our brother what we want for ourselves. And that was one of the reasons why unity did work well in the nation. It worked well. I remember once I was in the post office, and this was back in the early 80s when I first started at the post office. And one of the guys that was there, he asked me, how could I follow a man? Which he was talking about the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan. And so, first of all, he didn't understand that the minister wouldn't ask us to do anything that he wouldn't do himself. All he seen was, man, this guy tell them, if he tell them to run through a wall, they're going to go run through a wall. Or if he tell them to go jump in the lake, they're going to go jump in the lake. They think of the most ridiculous thing to define, you know, following a man. But that man was my brother. And that man was anointed by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad back in 1972 in one of his speeches that was, saying what the future needs to be. And so I was willing to follow that man because I felt as though he was leading us in the right direction. And so many of our people, they don't want to follow anyone. Well, how are we going to ever get unity if we don't follow nobody? You can't get unity, everybody working as individuals. When the fingers are spread apart, they're not as powerful as when they're brought together in a fist. And so that means that you're taking five and making it one. One powerful entity. And so that's what that is what is needed for us to succeed with bringing our young people, reeling them, our young men and young women back in, is we have to learn that what you're doing to your brother, you're doing to yourself. What you did back in the day, and when we meet with the young men, Brother Booker, myself, Brother Marvin, we tell them that we did stuff that caused y'all to be in the position that y'all in right now. You see, we're the ones that started that. They were killing back when I was coming up. It just wasn't as many as it is now. But we started that. And so we have a part in that. And so my point is that what you do to your brother or your sister is what you do to yourself. You know, I'm taking a lot more time than usual because this is a potluck week. And so we'll be, I'm allotted a little more time, you know, to explain different things, you know. But Brother Marvin, you know, that's my response, and I hope it was well taken. If you want to ask me another question, you know, to get a little deeper, then you're welcome to do that.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, Brother George. Thank you so much. Again, we're thinking about and thinking about what you do, right, to somebody else you actually are doing to yourself. And the golden rule is do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. And when you think about it that way, how you want to be treated should be the same way that we treat each other, irregardless of the situation, circumstance, or condition. All right, we're going to move on, Brother George, to the Be the One segment with Brother Booker coming right up. But you know we got to bring him in, right? Come on, brother. Thank you, Brother George.
Brother Booker.
We right here. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir, my brother. How you doing?
Well, how about yourself?
Good, my brother. As always, let me begin by saying peace to all the brothers and sisters within the sound of my voice. Brother, this is going to be just a continuation of what Brother George was just talking about, what you've been talking about. When we talk about the characteristics of the one, let me recap. The one is honest with himself. That's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The one is honest with himself. The one loves himself. The one loves his people. The one believes in himself. The one believes in his people, even if they don't believe in themselves. The one always stands for what he knows is right, even if he has to stand alone. And that's the one we talked about last week. This week, Brother George already done said it. Number seven. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Let me say this, brother. Everything we do must be based on the God in us. Everything, including peace, including politics, including economics, including athletics, including, community?
Culture.
Culture, education. It all should be based on the God in us, everything we do. That will eliminate all the division, all the confusion, all of the envy, all of the jealousy, all of the disagreements and so forth. I don't care your educational level or whatever. Everything we do must be based on the God in us. And as I said the other day, you should know you, who you are. If you don't know you, the answer is in you. We know. You know if you are honest. You know if you are righteous. You know if you are a liar, a murderer, a cheater. But you know you, who you are. You know when you're right. You know it. You're defining what right is to yourself. You're defining what's right, and it's based on the God in you. You know child molesting is not right. You know when you're doing wrong. You know when you are doing right. Love for your brother what you love for yourself. And I'm going to back up to number six. The one always stands for what he knows is right, even if he has to stand alone. Lots of time we like to say, but I ain't nobody else going to do it. Ain't nobody else doing that crap. Why am I doing it? See, nobody, forget everybody else. What are you going to do? You stand up for what you know is right. Even if you have to stand alone, you reflect it. And if we all stand for what we know is right, if we all be the one, if we all find the God in us, we will find each other. That's how we unite. It starts, and we say this all the time now, brother. It starts with us as individuals. It has to. We can't. I had to tell somebody the other day. I had a presentation we did at a conference at Virginia Union on Friday. It was a 2-part conference. I was there Friday, and I talked about the one, and it was a group of people from all over the world, brother. It was folks from England. It was folks from Africa. And it was some white folks in the room as well. And when I talked about the one, I talked about, look, how we can solve all the problems we have as a people, every last one of them, if we come together as a people, unite as a people. And I said, when I tell folks this, black folks this, every time after we discuss it, brothers and sisters said, Brother Booker, you're right. But it'll never happen. We'll never see it in our lifetimes. And my question becomes, why not? Then what are we living for? I'm living to do that. What else am I living for if I'm not living for the unification of my people to bring us together? Be the one. And then I went through the one and all the characteristics and said, this is what we need to do. At the end of the meeting, one of the white women that was in the meeting, because I had to leave, ran after me down the hall and said she wanted to hug me, and then she wanted to know if she could be the one. She said, when you talk about being the one, and black people, she said, will I be included in that? Can I do this? And I said, and she was from Scotland, and I said to her, I said, look, now I cannot be concerned with you and your folk right now. I have to get my people. How can I love you if I don't love myself? I've got to get my house together before I worry about yours. My house is falling apart. My house is burning. My house is being destroyed. And furthermore, and she wanted to tell me how young white boys hate themselves. Well, we hate ourselves because we've been taught to hate ourselves. That trauma of slavery created the self-hatred in us. It was designed to make us hate ourselves. Why young white boys hate themselves, I don't know. But I know why we hate ourselves. And we have to correct that. That's why I'm saying everything we do must be based on the God in us. And that's not anything against Samuel B. anti-white people. No, I've just got to be pro-black, love myself and my kind, get us together first, because we're not a hateful people, black folk by nature. We are not. How do I know that? Because I'm black and I'm not a hateful person. I have love in me. I have righteousness in me. I know me. I know us. Even if we don't know ourselves, I know us. How do I know you? Because I know me. We may not agree all the time. I may not agree with the things I see you do and know that you're doing, but now I understand all praise is due to Allah, to the God in me. I understand why we do the things we do now. Well, years ago I didn't, but now I understand why we function the way we function. Because we've been made to do the things we do. That's how we're supposed to function in this system, brother. We're supposed to be killing each other. We're supposed to be disrespecting each other. We're supposed to be lying and stealing from each other and cheating on each other. We're supposed to be doing hateful things to each other. That's what they want us to do and made us into the, I'll be nice, mama, into the Negroes to do. That's the whole thing, brother. Whole thing. And as Brother George said earlier, our characteristic for the day, the one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Brother Marvin, thank you as always. Keep doing what you're doing, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother Booker. Hey, Mom.
Peace.
I call him Mother Mom. He was nice today. All right. Hey, Booker, hang on with me today,
yes,
man. I might need you to carry this with me if you don't mind. Thank you for that segment on being the one, right? And again, if you just think about if you want for your brother or your sister what you want for yourself, it becomes a little bit easier, right?
Yep.
In terms of how you see the world, right? And if you could just switch the lens a little bit, and I don't know if some of y'all out there, when we used to have dial radios where you had to tune in until you got the right frequency. If it wasn't right, you could hear static and a little bit of sound. But when you tuned in, it came in clear. And I think we have to get in tune with ourselves a bit more, right? And thinking about how we've been divided, that's one thing.
Excuse me.
Perception of each other, that's two, right? Our beliefs in terms of religion and economics and status and all of that, all are impacting and affecting, and then social media as well now. So that's another prong on the hand of that thing that holds us very tightly, not together but apart. And so wanting for your brother and your sister is a dynamic thing when you can realize the benefits, right, of that wanting for each other can create a sense or want of unity amongst ourselves, which we desperately need, right? I think when you're out on the island and you just got you and you got one person, then y'all going to work together because you all you got. And that's how we have to think about it. So thank you, Brother Booker, for that.
Yes, sir.
527-7950 is the call-in number today if you want to join in on this conversation. It's Potluck Saturday. We're going to talk about dream today. Right, and this is a good one when you think about, you go back to when King was assassinated, killed, murdered, whatever you want to call it, in 68, right? 68 to 2024, I know y'all got some mathematicians out there because I can't do the calculation right now, but I'm sure it's, 56, 55 years or so, something like that. Anyway, 55 years ago, over 50 years ago now. The dream was established, I think that was like 63 when he did the speech, but so that'll be over 60 years. But the point is that he created in this society and the culture an idea or a belief surrounding the dream, right? The question is dream or reality? What is the living legacy of Dr. King? The dream or the reality, right? Or the reality of the dream. Are we living it? Or is that dream still a dream, right? And so there are two schools of thought, right, in this dynamic in terms of the dream, that one day that we can come together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. But is that really happening? And it could be happening in pockets and spaces, but has the system changed or has it modified itself to adjust itself to make room for that, but it's still very racist in nature, right? A system of oppression is still in effect, in my opinion, right? So as we live the dream or that legacy of Dr. King, the question becomes, look now, like, and I'm using, I'm paraphrasing if I can, Dr. King, when he realized what he had really gotten us into, I think we were doing pretty good in terms of unity. Now, we were strapped resource-wise, so I can see why the move was made, okay? This is my opinion. But when you think about having to be mobile, right, as a community, because, again, with segregation, there are barriers in place, right? You know about the system of redlining and all that. So the idea that our ancestors had, right, the civil rights ancestors, was really thinking about how we could use
Integration is a tool for upward mobility for all of us, right? I'm thinking. I could be wrong. That's the question. 845-277-9250. Are we living King's dream, right? And if we are, is it a real wholesome dream, or is it a nightmare, right, that we need to wake up from? Here, again, this show is about African-American empowerment, so we're going to have a hodgepodge of perspective because some people don't like what we're doing. I got that. Some people say, hey, keep doing what you're doing because we need it, right? Some people say, well, we don't need shows like that. That's true, too, for somebody. But what I'm saying is, as a collective and as a group, as we look at ourselves and we look in our communities, and I want you to think about it this way. When you look at America and you look at the areas that are densely populated with people of color or African Americans or indigenous Americans of color, what do you see? And would you want to move there? Not like a subdivision. Let me be clear. When I talk about a subdivision, I'm talking about a community that has stores, that has community centers, all of that stuff already set up. Dream or reality? Living legacy of Dr. King. Are we living that dream? We just came up on Dr. King weekend. The great stuff, right? I really like the vision and the movement with people out in the street marching for what they believe. I can see it, and it makes sense. But we're not marching in the streets anymore for what's right. Black lives do matter, but they've been mattering for a long time. So George Floyd was assassinated in the streets. Still happening. Right? So what does that life mean to you? And is that a part of the dream, right? And when you look at Congress, for example, or you look at the Senate, or you even look at our presidents, right? Or you look at the city governance or the state governance, do they look like us? Now, I'm saying as we look at what Dr. King's dream was, and even when you think about schools, right? When you go to the public school systems around the country, they are 90% people of color, even with gentrification. I'm saying, know that the public education system as it stands is one-sided for a reason, and we know it's because of white flight. And when you look at all the private schools, just check it out on the snow day, the ticker that goes by all of these private schools that are closed, and then you look at the public school systems where many of our children are housed. Is that the dream? Is that the dream? Now, for me, I can remember when I first went to elementary school, and I looked at the picture, and it's like maybe 10 or 12 white kids in the picture. Right? It's not about race. It's just about the reality. And as I got to the second grade, it was 4. When I got to the third grade, it was none. And we always had one white kid in school, but it was predominantly black. Why? Because all of those people and those families moved out of that community and more of us filtered in. Right? They call it white flight. You can call it what you want. For us, it's upward mobility in many aspects. So I'm going to bring Brother George in and Brother Booker, and I'm going to open up the line. I see Brother Lush on the line. So let's talk about it, right? Let's have a discussion. It's Potluck Wednesday. Brother Stan always talked about Potluck Wednesday. So it's Potluck Saturday. I'm opening up the line, Brother Lush. What do you think? What are your thoughts? Dream or reality? The living legacy of Dr. King. What you got for him?
Tough question today. Good evening, everyone. Greetings. You know, that is tough because we are living in a society, particularly a capitalistic society, that has driven us to be individualized now. And the philosophy is save yourself, quote unquote. And so I just kind of wonder, what would MLK say today? We have these different kinds and types of disturbances that's happening all across the world. We're still 14%, approximately 14% of the population here in this country. I think about the Radical King. There's a book called The Radical King where he mentions the fact that he may have thought he had led his people into a burning house. And so something was transpiring back then as it's happening today. It's hard. It's hard to say if it's a legacy, true or false, give or take, because for some strange reason or another, we have driven, it's almost we have been driven to become individualized. And let me just harp on just a previous conversation that we had some time ago about artificial intelligence and African ideology. It's as though the kind and type of times we're living in is that we have no other choice but to become individualized. And so what is that film that's around us that would allow us to be poor, that would allow us to connect with other people, to join forces? It seems as though that membrane has even itself closed up. It's a hard pill to swallow, but I think that as long as we look at ourselves, and I want to try to hopefully I understand what Brother Booker is saying with regards to the one, that, and also what Brother George mentioned earlier about as we do to others, we do to ourselves, we have to come to a realization. Who am I? Who are you? And who are we together? So for starters, that's my contribution. I'll still be listening and contributing later on as well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lush. I appreciate that. Great point. Right. Well, before you go, who am I? Who are you? And how can we work together? Was that it?
Yeah. Who am I? Who are you? Mm-hmm. And who are we together? And those three basic fundamental questions, Brother Marvin, are questions that one asks of himself as he's looking at himself in the mirror. Because you surely you can't see yourself physically unless you use an instrument or a device called a mirror to look at yourself, right? And so this essence from within has to be projected without, right? And so it bounces back. So in this basic law of communications or theory of communications, you have a sender and you have a receiver and vice versa. And so this thing keeps bouncing back and forth, back and forth. So who am I? The real individualized person that stands. Who are you? Referring to the fact that this image that I see of myself, okay? And then who are we together? All right. And so those are where I'm going with those questions as I ask them.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lush. I appreciate that. And by the way, I think, is it March 16th? We got Dr.
March
Lush
16th.
Coming up March 16th.
Yes, sir. 16th.
Go ahead.
Yes, I look forward to giving my presentation, my contributions toward the NAAEA ideology and principles, and think of this as a class. And so this is something that I know I've been needing for a long period of time, and not just cut grass on Saturdays or not just go shopping, something to engage in an intellectual kind and type of dialogue to empower myself as well as empower others. And so I look forward to March 16th and giving a presentation about citizen scientists. And so hopefully we'll be able to add on to what's already been said.
Looking forward to it. It's about education. And Dr. Lush will bring
yes.
it. That's
yes.
March 16th right here on Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of you know what for you know who. All right, let's go over to 5065. You got a comment or a thought on this conversation? Dream or reality, the living legacy of Dr. King. What's going on? What's happening? I guess you're just listening today. Let's go back to Brother George. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
What do you think?
Yes.
Dr. Dreams. Dr. King's dream. I kind of like that, though, Dr. Dream. Are we living
right.
it?
Well, my thoughts on that is that what Dr. King had in mind, I think in his mind he overstated what the overall culture would accept. And so what he envisioned in his mind, no, I don't think is going on. And even though we've had a black president, I'm not going to call the first black president, because we've had black people in rulership since the beginning of time. So I don't, you know, that doesn't mean anything. You know, I don't have any dislike for Barack Obama or anything like that, but I just don't think that that was a measuring stick that things, that times had solved the problem. Because things are going to change, you know, no doubt, because time is going to continue to move on. But as far as with Dr. King, his dream and what he envisioned that he wanted to see happen in this country amongst all of the different groups of people, no, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that that has not happened. And every kind of way that he fought for to try to level the playing field, to give opportunity to people who didn't have the ability to give the opportunity to themselves, is they're attempting to take it back. You know, even when you look at the brothers that were student scholars, that many of them put together the black intelligentsia, who put together the different views of the world through black eyes, and wrote books to and did investigation into the accomplishments of black people in the world to make us feel better about ourselves. And it was Dr. King's hopes that other people would feel better about us and appreciate us greater, and it would lead to a mutual respect for, when we look at the accomplishments of some of the other racial groups, even if it's in more modern times, without the accomplishments of the ancient times, you wouldn't have the accomplishments of the modern times, because you have to have a foundation upon which to build off of. And so my answer, you know, like I said, is no. No, I don't think that that Dr. King's dream is realized, and I agree with Brother Lush when he said that in the end, you know, Dr. King had felt like he led us into a burning house. And we're still there trying to put the flames out. You know, so that's my view, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother George. When you think about, from that perspective, living in a burning house, where you wake up every day, for example, knowing that somebody has to be up trying to put the fire out day and night, right?
Right.
So if we think about it from a perspective of living in a burning house, living in a burning house, the house is on fire, and you have to sleep in it, you got to cook in it, the smoke is in there, but you still existing. And I think in some ways, because of the systems that are already in place, we have to experience that on so many levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, that we don't think about the impact of the smoke, so to speak, that are impacting us, right, that are impacting your child's breathing, for example, right? Living in a house that is flamed, right, and inflamed. And so how do we think about that, right? Because we have to think about now, as we look back, we've lived through this for most of us, right? What has been the impact that we can see? Brother George mentioned that we had the first black president, quote, unquote. Does that move forward, right? What has changed with the condition of what I know to be many who continue to live in impoverished communities? Is it, again, do you have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps when others have generational wealth? And I like to, before I bring Brother Booker in, I'd like to speak to his comment from the lady from Scotland, if you don't mind. I would say absolutely yes. You can be the one. And I got some ideas and suggestions on how you can do that. One, you could be the one by teaching and training and developing your people to understand the condition that they put us in. Two, I think really considering how important it is to help us repair ourselves. And so the idea here is you can be the one by helping us help ourselves, right? That means you have to teach your colleagues and your kinship how to be humane again, right, in terms of coming to the table, but also allowing us room to continue to grow, right, without putting obstacles and challenges in place. So I would say, yeah, absolutely. Help us help ourselves. Help us grow. Help us to repair. Help us to get resources that we need to continue to build and grow, and help us to bring our families back up to a standard and to par. Brother Booker, coming back to you now.
Yes,
what are
sir.
Your thoughts? Dream or reality? We live in the legacy of Dr. King, or are we destined to flame out?
Let me say this. I've asked the question before of students and so forth. I say, what is the first thing you have to do for a dream to have a chance to come true? What's the first thing you have to do for a dream to have the chance to come true? And I don't think I've gotten the answer I was looking for, but maybe one time. And I really can't remember who may have said it. But the first thing you have to do for a dream to have a chance to come true is you have to wake up. Because
mm-hmm.
ain't no dream going to come true when you're sleeping. Okay? And the dream was always based on others changing how they treat us. See, that's what the dream was all about. Dr. King's dream was all about white folks changing. I have a dream that one day, all men, you know, in other words, what was stopping that from being a reality was white folks, not black folks. We dreaming that one day we're going to see this thing, you know, and we must also understand that everything the civil rights movement fought for were all the things that white folks wanted us to have anyway. They just made us fight for them. They were going to give them to us all along. They were going to let us use their restaurants, come in their restaurants and sit next to them. They were going to let us come into the theaters with them and sit next to them. They were going to let us use the same toilets that they use. They were going to let us come to their schools. Over time, they wanted us to have those things, but they made us beg for them. So did they get, you know, a dream? And as the brother George said, and Brother Lush said, as Dr. King said it towards the end, I think I led my people into that burning house you were talking about. And he made a mistake. But even look back before him, there was a brother
mm-hmm.
called Vernon Johns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vernon Johns was a brother, a preacher too, that stood out in front of his church of bourgeois Negroes and sold vegetables and fruit and so forth. He grew his own stuff and wore coveralls and so forth. I don't know if you ever seen a Vernon Johns store. And his members were like embarrassed. Look at him out there doing this, and he was like, you niggas out your mind. You know, he said, I ain't gonna never buy another pair of shoes until I can buy a pair that's made by a black man. You know, he said, we got to get out of this. So eventually they ran Vernon out of town. The white folks were upset. The white folks downtown were out upset with Vernon Johns and how he was acting. So they got the house Negroes in the church to get rid of him. And they ran him out of town, Vernon Johns. And you know who they replaced him with? Dr. King. That's who replaced Vernon Johns when the white folks were unhappy with Vernon Johns and had to run him out of Alabama. Mm. They replaced him with Martin Luther King. Okay? So we got to understand about this dream. We're dreaming that that other folk gonna change. And I put something on Facebook the other day. I said, you know, I understand what white folks have done to us in the past. I understand what happened to us in slavery. I understand what white folks did to us prior to slavery. We think that it only began on the plantations in America. Oh, hell no.
Come on. Talk.
It started over in the motherland. How you going to enslave a people and take people from their motherland and you supposed to got free black people left in Africa that's not going to come looking for their brothers and sisters, knowing we at war? No, this started well before 1619, before they brought us here, brother, for it to even work, you know? This started long before then, with the treatment that they put on our people, okay? So when we look back at this thing, we got to understand, try to understand all of it, what happened to us as a people and how we got to where we are today. You know, so a dream, what's the reality? You know, what is the reality? What were we dreaming for? Again, we were dreaming, hoping that our master would change. That's all the dream was about. Our master would change. And we dreaming for things, praying for things that he wanted us to have all along. He just made us beg him for them. So for any dream to come true, brother, first thing we got to do is wake up. We got to see it for
like
what it really is, you know? So that's where I'm at, brother.
Absolutely. All right. All right. We're at the top of the hour, 845-277-9250. American Empowerment Saturday. You're listening live. We're talking about Dr. King's dream. Is it a dream or a reality? What's the living legacy of the dream as we see it? Right, and as we look down the road to what's next for us, right, and then reflecting back on the dream, and we look at, in my mind, some of the many losses. Ooh. Y'all know what I mean. Shoot. Anyway, the loss that we had, right, in terms of economics, right, as we integrated to the peril and demise of our own economic systems that we put in place to integrate into ones where we used to have thriving businesses in our communities, our Black Wall Street, right, and our two streets like here in Richmond. You know, we've lost so many things, right? The Negro Leagues, where we had our own sports teams and our own organizations that were thriving, that we gave them up to integrate and lose so much on the back end. The thing is that when you look at the condition of our family, for example, right, those families that we used to have dual parent households, and now it has shifted since the dream. Prior to that, we had a number, 73% of our families, right, were in dual parent households. And that has changed now to, just mostly single parent households. And so how do we think about, in terms of the condition of us, our communities economically, right? And then the social product of integration. Now, some of our people have benefited. I'm sure some people live in nice communities and have nice jobs, right? But I would dare say there's a 20% of our people who are at or below the poverty level that there are no bootstraps. And so there are programs and social programs that are put in place to help people, but there's something happening, right? Where is the growth, right? Where is the organization? Where are those institutions that, like our churches, for example, that used to be embedded and entrenched in our community that help guide our communities to the light, so to speak? I'm going back to Brother George for a minute. No, let me go to Dr. Lush. Dr. Lush, let me come to you first, because Brother Booker mentioned Dr. Vernon Johns, who was at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church right in your fair city. And what do you recall, if any, about Dr. Johns and his legacy as you are a resident of Montgomery, Alabama right now?
Well, for me, for me, it's that happened just slightly ahead of my time, being born in 57. So there goes my age. A lot of those things happened before my time. And even then, I wasn't really here in the city at all. So I, like others, may have heard the Vernon Johns story that was televised, or may have read about him, et cetera. Things have changed since then, right? And so here in Montgomery, Alabama, we've had or come to see our first black mayor in about 200-year history, right? Throughout the rest of the country, you have majority black council people, educate people on the educational boards, et cetera. And so things have changed. Have we woken up yet is the good question to ask. Some say, no, we haven't. Others say we're still fast asleep, and there's no possibility of waking up at all. You know, when you're asleep, sometimes you get so comfortable, right, that you may not realize what's going on around you. And you could be in that burning house, right, and not really realize, because you're in that comfortable position. You're in that, especially now in this cold weather season, you just snuggled up. And so you're not really aware of all of what's going on around you. So Vernon Johns is one of those personalities that we should have been using for quite some time. From what I understand and read about, that he left here and wound up going back to Virginia, if I remember what I may have read or his. So there's a big connection between us here in the South and you guys on the East. And it's almost in every regard. The first enslaved Africans brought to the Port Comfort / Jamestown area, the very last documented slave ship brought here to Africatown near Mobile, Alabama. So it's just interesting the way things have played out.
Hey, that's so true, right? And Dr. Johns is a native of Virginia, or was, of course. But that vocal, right, leader, right? And I think in terms of leadership again, right, and what happened in my mind to Dr. King along with Malcolm X speaks volumes to what's happening, right, in our community. And so when you think about the legacy of Dr. King, it ends with his death, right? And a lot of things changed. Our people are not as vocal, right? Those leaders, many are. I got to give it to Minister Farrakhan for being vocal. But when you think about true vocal leadership, I think it ended with Dr. King's assassination. And I think the church pulled back out the street and into the sanctuaries and where they still are today. No disrespect intended, but I think the church has now moved to a different position in how it's going to engage our community. And I think it's those institutions, again, have to be the ones that continue to move our communities forward until we get our feet on the ground. Thank you, Dr. Lush. I'm going to go over to Brother George. I'll get back to Brother Booker. Brother George, as we now move into solutions, like Dr. Lush said, many of our people are comfortable, right? They're living in convenient spaces now, many. I know, for example, that a lot of families are struggling, but how do we create solutions that are beneficial for our people, right? What is the solution to now the dream? Because instead of dreaming, our people are what I would consider in hibernation. What are your thoughts?
Well, sometimes the dream can turn into a nightmare. And last night, I think I was talking to you about a lot of things that my father taught me when I came to Virginia. And one of the things he said that stuck with me to this day, he said that he has seen harder times, but never such uncertain times. And so that put me in a mindset of like, damn, I'm living in a ball of confusion, you know, because these are uncertain times. And when you start looking at the direction that the world is going in, the direction that everybody had anticipated after Dr. King's speeches and the way that he was given a holiday and all of that, that things would be moving in a very different direction, not a resurgence of the white nationalist movement and not a resurgence of take away everything that's black and to where you are a second-class citizen again. You know, so times for us are uncertain, very uncertain. So we have to take the initiative to convert that uncertainty into certainty. And you can only do that through relying on yourself. And so that's why the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we need to look out for self and kind first. And that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to start doing, even if it's the most basic thing, we're going to have to start a little after-school program and get as many of our little kids to participate and teach them about who we are as a people and teach and figure out what their intelligences are and how to have fun and make it, you know, fun to learn and rekindle that scientific mind that our people have demonstrated throughout the years. We're the ones that's going to have to do that. We're the ones that's going to have to right the ship for us. And like I said, the ways that that's going to have to happen is we're going to have to change our mindset. And there are many of our people right now that are starting business ventures, and we have to learn to support that. You know, when our people start a business venture and it becomes popular, and they get notoriety for what it is that they're doing, and we have to get out there and support it. And we also need to get support with our dollars to start different programs for our people. Because it's very obvious that this country has to go through a struggle between those who don't want to see us have an opportunity, because just because you get an opportunity doesn't mean you're going to achieve. So I'm not even going to say those who don't want us to achieve. I'm going to say those who don't even want us to get the opportunity to achieve are going to fight tooth and nail to keep us from getting opportunities. And so that means that the burden of us getting an opportunity in this country is going to fall on us. Now, this is another thought that we spoke on, and the minister spoke on this some years ago, and he said that he felt like that the United States should give black people the same thing that they give the Jews, dual citizenship, so that we can be citizens in Africa and we can go back and forth to Ghana. And I know that Ghana has offered us citizenship. And we need to take advantage of that and go back and forth. And when there are opportunities that present themselves in Africa, then we can take advantage of those. If it's opportunities that present themselves here, then we take advantage of those. If we can set up a situation where we can get, you know, an African country to do business with us here, and we just go back and forth, we need to entertain all of that in order to pull us out of the rut that we're in. And it's not that it's not possible for us to do this, because study of our history will tell you that we've been in situations difficult like this before. It might have even been worse. But we have always found a way to pull ourselves out of that and put ourselves back in a position of respectability in the world. In the world. Not just amongst ourselves, to a position of respectability again in the world. And so, brother, that's what my remarks are. That's my response to the question there.
Thank you, Brother George. I think that's a beautiful exchange, right? The more that we can have international connections, right, where we can build relations. Again, you said it. Ghana is offering dual citizenship to our people. But I think we should go over there offering something to those communities and those cultures, and not bringing some of the behaviors that we see that reflect some of the worst parts of us. So we're talking solutions now. 845-277-9250. I'll go back to Brother Booker. Solutions, brother, what do you have as we continue to turn the corner toward the end of our show? What you got for me?
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, in my lifetime, we've gone from burn, baby, burn, to you need Jesus. And our problem, in my humble opinion, we're still waiting for those good white folks to take care of us. We're still waiting for those good white folk to save us from Donald Trump and all those people that's voting for Trump. You know, we're still waiting for those good white folk to reveal themselves and step forward and save us once again from them. We can't wait for good white folk, brother, in my opinion. I ain't got nothing against good white folks if they're out there. But I think Brother George mentioned it earlier, Brother Lush mentioned it. We need to do this for ourselves. That's the solution, brother. Like, the answer to all our problems is to come together as a people. Stop waiting on good white folks. Stop believing that good white folks. Stop believing that in time this thing going to change. Stop dreaming. I got a dream that one day this going to happen. This gonna, not to be disrespectful, but wake up. Damn the dream. We know what we have to do. We live in it. We see it. We see the house burning. What's the first characteristic of the one? Be honest with himself. We see it. I see it. I know what's going on. I know. I've got to admit that to myself. One of the hardest things to admit that I had to admit as a person, and we all have to admit it, that you've been a fool. That was one of the hardest things I've had to admit in my life, that I've been a fool. They got songs about it. Everybody plays a fool sometimes. No exceptions to the rule. Admit it. Be honest with ourselves. We got to stop waiting on, quote unquote, good white folk to save us once again. We, like I said, we've gone from burn, baby, burn, any means necessary, to you need Jesus. And I'm not knocking Jesus, because some folk define Jesus, the word meaning justice among us. So if that's what we're talking about, yes, we need justice. But we need to bring it in ourselves. We need to bring the justice. We need to bring the Jesus that way. That's what we need to do, brother. That's the solution. Come together as people. Once we come together, then the ideas of moving forward of what we do as a people, oh, man, we'll be surprised at the great ideas and the things that we will generate out of our minds for the benefit of our people. That's what we need, brother.
All right.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Peace. All right. Let's go back to the lines. 9266. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Nope. I had to come on mute for you to see me.
All right. Welcome. How are you?
Good. Yeah. I have a question. I apologize, but I did join late because I was busy. But we were talking about a dual citizenship with, you know, United States citizen and Ghanaian citizenship. Has anyone on the call ever gotten citizenship or know someone who has? And if so, do they know what the process is?
Brother George, you want to take that? I will say this. I know Ghana offers special visas to African-Americans, but I'm not sure if they do dual citizenships. But I do know that individuals with Ghanaian descent, and they can prove that, can apply for dual citizenship under a Citizenship Act that they did around 2000, right? So we can, as African-Americans, can get citizenship by birth, or marriage, or naturalization. So it's an opportunity. Brother George, you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here, but I really don't know a lot about that. You know, Brother Ishmael probably would be an expert at that, but he's not on the line right now. And no, I don't know, you know, the process that you would go through. I would just have to ask him and then go through the process, you know.
Okay.
But I don't know, so I don't want to tell somebody wrong. But I do think that that's a solution, though.
It is an opportunity, right? And I know that there are a few of our friends who have taken that plunge and seem to be thriving in that. Although I would say it for many could be scary because, you know, you don't know anybody, but that is one of the things that you have to go through if you want to improve your life. All right, anything else? My sister.
No, thank you. That's because I did hear it, like you said, I think it was back in 2000 when they talked about it. And I was always curious about that. And so since it was brought up in the call, I thought I'd ask because I was interested in it.
Okay, well, let me ask you this since I have you on the line. Dr. King's dream, do you feel it's a reality or is it a dream? Where are we as we look back over the 60 years or so of his assassination and the dream that he lived for?
Some of both. I think I will say this. I think that because we have the internet, the world has become a lot smaller. So even though we still have racism, because we're able to show the world how we're being treated, I think now people are opening their eyes to it, and they're also starting to realize that, you know, black people are more than just drug dealers and gang members and stuff like that. But, you know, I think some of the dreams has come true, but we still have a long way to go. And like I said, because the world has gotten so much smaller, I think now they can see, you know, that black people or, you know, we're human, just like everybody else, you know, we're human. So I don't know. Some days it feels like it's a reality, and some days it still seems like it's a dream, but, you know, we're still dreaming. And Brother Booker, I would never forget what you said. What do you have to do if you have a dream? And you said, wake up. And I was like, wow. So I'll never forget that answer. So.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your response. We appreciate you. Thank you for listening. All right, 452-779-2250. Again, we're talking about Dr. King's legacy, right? Dream, nightmare. What's the living legacy of a man who lost his life? And I will say this before we go. In terms of, and I'm going to Brother Booker for this one, in terms of being the one in Dr. King's sacrifice, let's go down the list, Brother Booker, and do a comparison of being the one with Dr. King's dream. You there?
Yes, sir.
The
one is honest with himself. Now, you want me to answer the question, do I think Dr. King was honest with himself? Because if you put me in that position, brother, being honest with myself, I had to say, no, he wasn't.
I think think he was honest toward the end when he realized what he had done.
He started to wake up at the end. Yes, when he said he was leading us into a burning building, a burning house. If he said that one loves himself, again, I'd have to say no, because back in them days, I didn't love myself. You know, and a lot of us running around here, definitely weren't a lot of us running around here back then, black folk that loved ourselves. We didn't know who in the hell we were. The one loves his people? No, couldn't have. How are you going to love your people if you don't love yourself? The one believes in himself. Again, back in those days, I didn't believe.
Let me pause. I think he did. He had to put his life on the line like he did, knowing what the threats were. But go ahead. I'm just thinking.
Well, yeah, he's stealing my line now, thinking out loud. No. Sometimes we put ourselves in positions that we don't realize we're putting ourselves into until it's too late to realize it, okay? Because I think he thought he was following along, doing what he was, you know, supposed to be doing. Before you realize, okay, law, I'm in danger. That, when his life became at a point where now I think that I might be in danger, that's when he realized, I think I'm going to let my people to this burning building, into this burning house. See, he didn't know that at that time, in my opinion, okay, because I never met the man, you know. The one believes in himself. Well, he didn't know himself. I mean, when I say he didn't know himself, he didn't know his black self. Who he was, because in my humble opinion, if he did, he wouldn't have went in the direction that he went in. You know, back in them days, brother, the only black man that I knew of that knew themselves and loved his people and was trying to do the right thing by his people was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I just got to be honest, I just got to say that, okay? He was the only one that at that time. And he also believed in his people, even if they don't believe in himself, Again, I'd have to say that was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. All right? The one stands for what he knows is right, even if you have to stand alone, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad versus Dr. King. You know, and I'm not, look, I love both of them, brother, because they're black men. And I, like I said earlier, I understand now why Dr. King did what he did, just as I understood what my father did when he did what he did. At first I didn't, because I used to hate my father. But I have a better understanding of why we do the things we did and do. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Elijah Muhammad again. Great communicator. Now, when we talk about a great communicator, yeah, he was a great orator. Whether he was a great listener or not, I don't know. The one is not afraid to die for what he knows is right. Towards the end, I would say, I give him that. Towards the end of his life, when he came up and he said, come, when he stood up against the Vietnam War, and he met with Elijah Muhammad, okay, and he said, I think I've led my people into a burning building. He realized at that time that at this point now, I might be dead. I might have to die. And I do believe he would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. So there you go.
All right.
Yes, sir.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Brother Booker.
Thank you,
I
sir.
I appreciate you. There
Thank
is
you
the
too,
one. So, again, the debate can go on. Whatever it is that you do, wake up from your own dream and begin to live your reality. Figure out what the solutions can be for your life and your family. Continue to look out for self and kind, right? Get away from individualism, right, and saving yourself and look towards saving others. But I think, again, if the plane is going down, you do have to put your mask on first. But let's look at how we can create solutions and get from this comfortable state to thinking about reasons that we can apply ourselves to each other for. If you love yourself, love your brother, your sister as yourself, then you would do those things to make sure that they are taken care of. And that's what it's all about. So use the one, become the one, actualize it in your life. And again, we do to others, done to ourselves, we can't go wrong. It's a Empowerment Saturday. Have a great week. Peace and blessings.